And we'll begin now with Clayton Morgridge reading from his book, Demystifying Demons. Clayton?
Thank you, Denise. Well, a central theme of the book, and which is actually political, is to insist that we human beings are deeply social beings, meaning not just that we have to cooperate with each other in order to make our livings and to avoid conflict, but that social life makes up the very foundation of our souls, of who we essentially are. Of course, social life is also a problem and a source of our inner demons, like guilt, for example. So a lot of self-help books propose to separate the soul from its social connections that cause those problems, and even from the body and its pains. In this section from chapter 1, I examine this idea of the soul or the self as existing apart from the material and social world that is so prevalent in self-help books. Self-help books, of which there are thousands, often with the word soul in their titles, promise a quick and easy path to enlightenment and an end to the troubles of our souls. This book, as already mentioned, is not a self-help book. It may help, but it offers no guarantees and makes no promises. The path we will follow here is a more difficult one, with more questions and fewer answers than self-help books. To explain why this more winding and ambiguous path is worth taking, I would like to show why the promises made by self-help books are deceptive and likely to give only short-term and unreliable relief. One of the more intelligent and well-written self-help books is The Untethered Soul, The Journey Beyond Yourself by Michael A. Singer. His book and mine begin with the same problem, expressed in different words. While I call attention to our inner demons, like guilt, self-loathing, and anxiety, Singer points to the voices we hear in our heads giving us unwanted advice and criticism. Both books pursue the question, who am I? But pursuing this question takes up most of the rest of my book, and the answers are tentative and incomplete. Singer, on the other hand, leads the reader quickly to a definitive answer that, he claims, provides the key to enlightenment and the silencing of the inner voices. Here is how he proceeds. He presses the reader to answer the question, who are you? But he refuses any response that refers to your relations with others and anything about your body and anything that you have done or that you are experiencing. All of that, he says, can and does change, while you remain the same you. Everything that goes on in your mind, your feelings, emotions, and your thoughts are just objects you are observing. They are not parts of the essential you. So what is left to be you? Simply the pure consciousness that is doing the observing. This pure, unencumbered, untethered self is free to choose to have or not to have fears or desires towards whatever passes before it. Since nothing that is in your mind is really you, there is no need to go on defending all that extraneous material you used to identify with. Quoting, the reward for not protecting your psyche is liberation. You are free to walk through this world without a problem on your mind. Unquote. Moreover, there is no danger that you might be troubled by demons you cannot see or control, for nothing within us is hidden from the enlightened and fearless consciousness. Quoting again, because there is no part of you that you're not willing to see, the mind is no longer divided into the conscious and the subconscious. Unquote. Well, this reduction of the soul to a pure act of consciousness is an attempt reminiscent of the philosopher Descartes to remove us from the real human condition of flesh and blood bodies, desiring the help, companionship, and love of others, and who depend on the soil and weather of the earth for comfort and survival. Singer, like many others writing in this vein, seduces us into picturing ourselves abstractly, secure in an imaginary existence apart from anything in the world that can cause pain and suffering, including our own desires. The pure self we are asked to suppose that we are is nothing. It's an immaterial, solipsistic non-entity with no qualities and no motives for acting one way or another. The idea that this pure, disengaged consciousness is us, our souls, has no relationship to what we know of our lives in a material, biological, chemical, and social world. It gets its confirmation only in the fleeting experience of readers who succumb to a fantasy of total freedom from anything beyond their control and feel momentarily empowered by a baseless self-confidence. The possibility that we are conscious of only a very small part of our souls and that our inner demons may be grounded in parts of ourselves beyond our grasp can never be taken seriously once pure consciousness is defined as the totality of what we are. Let us take ourselves as we really are. The difficulties and obscurities that arise when we try to answer the question, "Who am I?" point to something deeper than consciousness, and it will take a careful inquiry to get even a rough idea of who and what we really are. I do not claim that it's impossible to fundamentally change our mental and emotional habits by means of proactive, intentional action, whether by some spiritual practice like meditation, resolving to replace negative thoughts with positive ones, or following a 12-step recovery program. But many people begin such practices only to give them up after a few days, weeks, or months. Why is this? As we will see, every word we utter, every gesture and posture of the body interacts with a fabric of feeling and expectation, fear and desire that was woven into us before we had any ability to perceive or control ourselves. Trying to give conscious direction to our souls is rather like trying to use wrenches and screwdrivers to manage the flow of water in an ancient swamp. Some people do come to feel more in charge of themselves, less controlled by alien forces, when they deliberately decide to think and act differently under the guidance of someone who tells them what to do. But I think the odds of success and the ability to sustain such changes will be improved by the sounder grasp of how our souls are put together that is offered in these pages. We are going to try to make sense of ourselves and our lives. If nothing else, I hope you will come away from this book with a deep appreciation of the awesome complexity of the human soul. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.